Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. It is our winter fun drive, and we'll get back to that in a moment. Bill Thompson III has been bird watching for 40 years. He knows all the tricks and why they work to attract birds to your backyard. He's with us today to talk about his new book on the topic, Identifying and Feeding Birds. Bill is the editor of Birdwatcher's Digest and has written numerous books on bird watching for young and old alike. He lives in Southern Ohio with his wife, author-illustrator Julie Zakafous, a frequent guest on All Sides, and their two children as well. Welcome back to the show, Bill.
Thanks, Ann. Glad to be here.
You are listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, and this is our winter membership drive. Remember, listener support is the foundation of our budget. We can't do it without you. Please make your pledge of support right now at WOSU.org or by calling 1-866-897-9678. Our goal this hour is $1,500. We can meet this goal with your help. Online pledges count toward the goal, too, at WOSU.org, 1-866-897-9678. If you'd like to give us a call and with a pledge of support at the $100 level, our thank you gift to you will be the book Identifying and Feeding Birds at the $100 level. Go online to WOSU.org, where we have a secure server, or call 1-866-897-9678. Identifying and Feeding Birds by Bill Thompson is the perfect thank you gift for yourself or a bird enthusiast you know. And by last count, there's about 50 million of them out there. You know one. You might not even know you know one. At the $100 pledge level, you will learn bird feeding basics and how to have a bird-friendly backyard. Call 1-866-897-9678 and pledge $100 to get this book as our thank you gift and to support 89.7 NPR News. That's 1-866-897-9678 or online at WOSU.org. Wow, Bill, it was worth the wait, though, because this is a beautiful book. In it, you make a distinction in the book between attracting birds and just feeding them.
Right.
What's
yes.
the difference?
Well, I mean, you know, most of us who have any kind of habitat in our backyard, or even if we just have a, you know, a back deck and a maybe a couple potted plants, you know, flower baskets back there, you're already doing some things to attract birds. And I've always felt that when you're approaching, you know, wanting to bring birds into your view, the best way to do it is to attract them with the natural stuff first and then augment that with some feeders. So, you know, the way you do that is by planting bird-friendly plants and trees in your yard, things that produce berries and seed or nectar, and then also by, you know, kind of letting a patch of your property, if you can, just kind of go wild to give the birds as varied a habitat as possible. And, of course, I'm a big advocate of a chemical-free backyard.
I just try to leave as much up. In other words, at the end of the growing season, I don't chop it all down anymore. I just leave as much up, as many stalks, as many this and that, and as I can to create some kind of environment where birds will even want to perch for a moment.
And a lot of people don't realize that if you have a zinnia bed or even tomato plants or you know, any kind of flower bed, anything in your garden or flower beds, you can leave that up. The birds will pick through it because there are insect eggs in there, there are seeds and you know, seed bits and all kinds of stuff that the birds will pick through over the winter. Plus, it's a little bit of shelter for them, too, if it's a nice thick patch of, you know, viney tangle or something. We do that very thing, too, and we leave our gardens, you know, to just lie fallow all winter long. And then when we, in the spring, once there's a new crop of natural foods and the birds start coming back, the insects are active, then we usually do our tidying up of the garden then. Because, you know, the birds really do take advantage of that. We found our coneflowers and our sunflowers. Just, the birds are all over them all winter long.
Let's listen to some bird sounds now, because this just makes you feel like spring when you hear a bird twittering.
And we could use a little bit of that.
We could use a little bit of spring right now. So let's listen to the eastern bluebird. I love that one almost for all the background twittering, as I did with the foreground twittering. Now, I'm not sure if it's the eastern bluebird or not, but the bluebird actually doesn't migrate that far away.
Right. They're what we call facultative migrants, which means when we're having nasty weather like a lot of us are having right now, bluebirds and some of our semi-resident birds, they'll just drift somewhere, often south, or maybe in the case of our bluebirds here in southern Ohio, we know they just go down into the deep wooded valleys, and they seek shelter, or they drift south far enough to find open ground and stuff, you know, berries and fruits that aren't covered in ice and snow. And then they're often back. So, you know, it's even true of our robins. Mm-hmm. People think about the robin as being the, quote, first sign of spring, when in reality, I was looking out my office window yesterday morning here, and snow's coming down like crazy, and there probably were 75 robins in the holly tree right next to our office here eating the holly berries. So birds like the bluebirds will only go as far as they need to survive. And people don't realize they're really with us all winter. They're just not as apparent.
That kind of brings up one of those myths that you address in your book, Identifying and Feeding Birds, that if you do feed birds and then maybe you go away for a month on vacation or something, just because you've left doesn't mean they're going to starve because they've become, you know, habituated
right.
to your feeding.
Right. And let me just say that going away for a month on vacation would be awesome.
I have absolutely no idea what that would be
like. But let's just say.
Let's just pretend.
Go away for a month on vacation somewhere nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, birds have evolved over the eons to, they've got wings, and they use them to go and find food and shelter and so forth. So while we love to think that the birds absolutely rely on us to survive the winter, it's not the case. It's not that cut and dried, as it were. Birds do have some enhanced survival rates, probably birds that are a little bit weaker or sicker or maybe less mobile. Maybe they're injured. They might survive. We know that some species like cardinals and red-bellied woodpeckers and Carolina wrens have used the bounty of food at feeders to extend their ranges slightly farther north. But birds like chickadees and titmice that are resident birds that don't migrate, they're able to survive just fine without our feeders. And even if everyone quit bird feeding right now, sure, the bird population would probably suffer slightly, but we're not the ones keeping them alive in winter. They have all the tools and ability and mobility to survive just fine.
I don't know if I blocked this out because I can't imagine I haven't known it before, but in reading your book, you made reference to the fact that most birds don't live more than a couple years.
Right.
That makes me really sad. I mean,
well, and that
aren't those cardinals the same ones that were here 9 years ago in my backyard?
Well, you know, there are exceptions to the rule, but the average lifespan of a songbird, like the birds at our feeders, it's, you know, 2 to 3 years, something like that, and in many cases, much, much shorter, probably in a few cases a lot longer. And I can give the listeners some clues on how they can tell if it's the same bird. But what I think that short survival span points to is how incredibly productive birds need to be in order to maintain their populations. You know, think about all the things that they face just from the moment they hatch, you know, bad weather, predators, things like glass windows that they accidentally fly into, wires, you know, cell phone towers, you know, all that stuff is working against them. So it's really surprising that birds are as able to maintain their populations as they are. And you know, as our responsibility as feeder operators is really to offer them food and clean feeders and without the possibility of disease and things like that, and to keep predators like, you know, house cats away from our feeders.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, and this is our first membership drive on the new 89.7 NPR News, and it is very important that we hear from you. Because of that, we need you to show your support for this public service radio station. Every day, All Sides brings you conversations with interesting people like Bill Thompson, and we talk in-depth for an hour on an important topic. All Sides is only possible because of listener support. It's only possible because of you. 1-866-897-9678 or WOSU.org. You can give us a call Or you can go online to our secure server at WOSU.org. If you can support 89.7 NPR News at the $100 level, we have a great thank you gift. It is the book Identifying and Feeding Birds by Bill Thompson. Call 1-866-897-9678 and tell our volunteers that you want to support all sides and get this great book. It's a brand new book. It's right, just came on the market. You can also see the book online at WOSU.org. Our goal this hour is $1,500, and we have $1,300 left to go. Help us meet the goal with your pledge of $100 to 89.7 NPR News at 1-866-897-9678. The pledge only takes 2 minutes, and then you are a member of 89.7 NPR News. Membership is a wonderful feeling. It also brings with it and a WOSU member card. So pledge $100 to 89.7 NPR News right now, or pledge whatever you can afford. We appreciate everything you do. Every call you make matters to us. It's a vote for us, whatever you're donating. Thanks, Robert, in Columbus and Joan in Delaware. We are at the $1,300 level now. We appreciate all your help. We appreciate your support. Call 1-866-897-9678 to show your support for WOSU for 89.7 NPR News. My guest right now, Bill Thompson III. He's the author of Identifying and Feeding Birds. Bill is editor of Birdwatcher's Digest. He's written many books on birdwatching for young and old alike. He lives in southern Ohio with his wife and author, who's an author illustrator. You know her, Julie Zickafoos. If you're a regular listener, you know Julie. So, that's the connection there. Give us a call, 1-866-897-9678, to make your connection with our station and show your support. However, if you'd like to talk to Bill Thompson, call 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Bill, you write about in the book how the human-bird bond probably goes back a long time, and I always start laughing when I think about this because you're right about, well, of course, it wasn't always just about admiring the birds.
Right. We think probably the first true birders on the planet were cavemen, you know, knocking an Archaeopteryx out of the sky and cooking it and thinking, oh, it tastes pretty good. You know, I wonder how that other bird over there tastes. And so that was probably the initial bird watcher were people that needed to survive on by eating birds. But, you know, we also know that Native American mythology and a lot of their symbolism had to do with birds, whether it was a thunderbird or eagles or, you know, cranes. Cranes are and show up in a lot of mythology. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, but I think we just relate to birds really easily. They do the most incredible things with their singing and their plumage and their courtship and their good parents. And, you know, and they, after all, they can have been doing for millions of years what we've only figured out in the last 100 years, and that's how to fly.
And still not quite as well as they do, really.
No, and let me just add, speaking of the human-bird connection, that mm-hmm. your listeners, if they don't call in and pledge, I've got connections in the bird world. I can arrange for them to have no birds at their feeders.
Can we just say Alfred Hitchcock,
that's
right?
Oh, yeah, I can flip the switch that way, too, if you want. One phone call is all it takes for me, and yeah.
614-292-8513 if you'd like to speak with Bill Thompson, author of Identifying and Feeding Birds. And Mara in Columbus, welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi.
I think I'm on the air.
You are on the air.
Thank you. I wanted to ask him about, I have a one robin, and I have a balcony, and I'm on a third floor apartment. And 2 years ago, or so, this is the third winter, when they had that really bad winter, and well, they've all been bad, and they were talking about robins dying up in northern Columbus. Anyway,
yeah, yeah.
This bird started coming here, and he's right now eating apples outside my door, and he chases away the squirrels and the other birds, and he does eat bird food. And I think it's the same bird. He's just majestic. I mean, he's just... And when it gets really bad, I see him. Could he be the same bird is my question.
Yeah, I mean, he very well could be. I alluded to this earlier. One of the easy ways to tell if a bird is the same bird, or, you know, to make a good educated guess, is to see if there's any physical thing about the bird that you notice that's different from other robins. We had for years a robin that had like this a little frosty stripe of feathers on his head, and we called him Gramps. And we saw him in our yard. He didn't nest there, but he would come there in the spring, and he nested somewhere nearby. And he'd come and he'd sing, and he'd forage in our lawn for a while. And we call that a marker bird, a bird that has a little mark. Maybe it's a feather that hangs a certain way or a wing that droops a little bit. Or if he has follows the same habits, like your bird coming to eat apples.
Not just seeds, but there's nuts in it. He eats that stuff, too,
mm-hmm.
which I've heard is very unusual.
It's fairly unusual because, you know, robins really are they're not normal feeder birds. Where most people get robins in their backyard, other than going around in the lawn looking for earthworms or maybe eating berries in the winters, robins and a lot of the members of the thrush family love to bathe. So if you have a good bird bath with you know, nice shallow 2-inch water,
or
deep
even
water.
Put some water out there for them, like a big bowl of water.
Yeah, as long as you can keep it from freezing. Yeah. But yeah, they love to bathe. So all summer long, we have a parade of robins coming.
Well, he's
our
quite a character, and I enjoy watching him.
Yeah,
that's my canary.
That's cool. Yeah, and robins are great birds. They're probably about the one bird species that everybody can recognize.
Yeah. Well, thanks very much. I appreciate you.
Thank you, Mara.
Thanks, Mara. Thanks for your call. 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. My guest this hour is Bill Thompson III. He's an author of Identifying and Feeding Birds. He's also editor of Birdwatchers Digest. He's an expert, so give us a call if you want to talk with Bill, if you have a question or comment for him. Speaking of bird baths, there is a chapter in your book about bird baths, isn't there, Bill? Or at least a section in there about as far as attracting birds. Mm-hmm. There are some things about bird baths, so it's just not any old bird bath. One thing I was always surprised at is that they should be low to the ground.
Yeah, because that's where birds naturally find water. You know, you don't go into the woods and find a stream up on a pedestal 5 feet off the ground. So birds are used to accessing water that's on the ground and or low to the ground. And the neat thing about that is that it's much easier to see, and you'll get a lot more birds kind of approaching if you have it in a place where they're used to finding water. So, and of course, moving water, if you can add some motion to your water, that's the best. We have this thing called a bird spa that's like a big, very shallow, wide basin that has a pump and a big tank below it that pumps the water up through some fake looking rocks, and it cascades down and creates these ripples out to the edge of the pool. That thing is probably the most magnetically attractive thing that we offer all summer long. Now, we bring it in the winter because, you know, winter like this, these things freeze and crack. But starting once we're past the freeze date, that thing will be out all summer until probably Thanksgiving. And we have had, I think, somewhere around 60 different species come to our bird spa.
Wow.
Not all at once, obviously, but over the course of the years that we've had it. So, yeah, adding a little motion, there's a thing now you can buy at a bird store or online. It's called a water wiggler, and it sort of looks like a little Pac-Man unit that you put in your bird basin, and all it does, it runs on a battery, all it does is make a little ripple in the water, and that really drives the birds nuts. It attracts their attention and brings them in.
614-292-8513. If you'd like to speak with Bill Thompson, he's on the air right now with us. We're talking about his new book, Identifying and Feeding Birds. We're just talking about some information in there about, you know, the different kinds of bird baths that attract birds. They're not all created equally. There's fully half of the book, really, isn't it, Bill, is devoted to 100 common backyard birds, full color illustrations. It's absolutely gorgeous. So this is a great reference book. This book has it all. It's got the references you need. It's got all kinds of suggestions. Lots to learn about nesting boxes, and includes a chart with what size of home certain birds need. That's just one of the things. There's also a list of 10 things you can do to help nesting birds. We'll get to that in a few minutes. But this book is our gift to you at the $100 pledge level. We're in have started now in our winter membership drive, and we're looking for some new members. So if you have always thought about joining public media as a member, this is your chance. 1-866-897-9678. Thanks to Jennifer from Pataskala. We have $1,200 to go in this hour and a little over 30 minutes. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Remember, your support, listener support, is the foundation of our budget. Please make your pledge of support right now at WOSU.org or by calling 1-866-897-9678. Our goal today is simple, to get your pledge of support. And in return for your pledge, we are offering you Identifying and Feeding Birds by Bill Thompson at the $100 level. Go to WOSU.org or call 1-866-897-9678. That's 1-866-897-9678. This thank you gift is a great value. You are supporting 89.7 NPR News. You're supporting All Sides with Ann Fisher, and you're getting this book, and you will be a member of this station, complete with a member card. Pledge $100 to 89.7 NPR News right now, 1-866-897-9678. And if I haven't said it already, I just want to remind you that whatever you can show us in support of 89.7 NPR News, we appreciate. We know not everybody has the same level of resources, particularly these days. We understand that more than you'll ever know. So show us some support now, because if everybody gives what they can afford, we'll have enough. We really will. 1-866-897-9678. If you want to speak with Bill Thompson, 614-292-8513. And Rita from Victorian Village, thanks for your call and thanks for waiting.
Hi. I'd like to ask about something I've been curious about for quite a while now. I grow lots of sunflower seeds every year because I love having the yard filled with goldfinches. But what I'm curious about is why goldfinches will not eat sunflower seed at my feeder. They come for Niger, but they'll never eat the sunflower.
Well, I think that's sort of because the goldfinch is given the choice, would pick the Niger. It's a seed that their specialized bills can really process, whereas a bird like a cardinal or even a titmouse, you know, their bills are kind of bigger and clunkier, and they have a hard time opening those little Niger or thistle seeds and getting the rich little oily blast from the inside. And so goldfinches and pine siskins and common redpolls, and we have those here in Ohio, these are birds that always will pick Niger seed over anything else.
Well, they do love the sunflower seeds on the plants,
right,
growing in the yard, but
right,
they just won't eat it at the feeder, even at the end of summer when they've pretty much picked out all the seed.
Yeah, and my guess is it's as long as the Niger seed's there, that's what they're going to go for. What you might try, if you really want to get them over onto sunflower, is try offering a little bit of sunflower hearts.
Oh, okay, just the kernels?
Yeah, and that's a little bit more expensive, but it's a very efficient food because you don't have all the mess.
Right.
You know, I might show up, Rita, yeah, if you start offering that.
Yeah, you know, but the goldfinches, I find a lot of the finch mixes that are being sold now commercially have thistle or Niger seed, and then they'll have some sunflower hearts or sunflower bits, they're often called in there, and that's equally attractive to the goldfinches. But, you know, just think about it. I mean, would you rather go to a place where all the shrimp is peeled for you and it's all right there, just perfectly ready for you to eat, or would you rather go someplace where you've got to, like, you know, crack open the shrimp and peel it? And I that's kind of the difference, because goldfinches can get at those thistle seeds really easily and just eat them by the ton, whereas it takes a lot more effort for them to open a black oil sunflower seed and get at the meat inside it.
Well, even at those times when no Niger is available, they still won't eat sunflower seed from the feeder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
These are birds that live in a very expensive neighborhood. They're just used to the very best, I think.
They have their choice of picking.
Someone out there is giving them the hearts, Rita.
Yeah, okay. Our country birds just don't have that problem at all.
Thank you.
Thanks, Rita, for your call. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. If you have a question or comment for our guest, Bill Thompson, he's author of Identifying and Feeding Birds. He is also editor of Birdwatchers Digest. It's been on the show before, so this is your chance. If you've had a question, we can listen to a bird right now, then we'll get to a call. You mentioned the tufted titmouse, but you referred to them in plural as tufted titmice. I didn't know that.
Yeah, titmice, titmouses.
Okay.
Yeah. You know me. I'm an editor.
Okay. Let's listen to the tufted titmouse. Those are actually two titmice talking to each other.
Yeah, probably a pair.
Okay.
I would guess. You know, titmice, like a lot of our resident birds, they will often hang out in pairs and throughout much of the year and communicate to each other with these little contact calls back and forth.
614-292-8513. If you want to talk to Bill Thompson and Ruben, you're downtown and you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Some years back, there was an attempt made to nest a couple of peregrine falcons in downtown, I guess, because they prefer high places.
Right.
They were thinking of high-rise buildings being an ideal nesting spot for these. But I haven't heard or read or anything else about these two. I guess they were two of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't heard anything about them. Did they flee the coop?
Well, I think they had... They were around all through 2010. If you go to the DNR website, they have a live falcon cam because the birds evidently are nesting on the Rhodes State Office Tower down there in downtown. So if you go to www.dnr.state.oh.us, you can find them, or you can just Google Columbus, Ohio peregrines, and it'll come up. You can watch them. I would be willing to bet that if the pair is still around, they'll be starting to nest and court fairly soon here. You know, a lot of our raptor species nest in late winter, so it might be, I would say by about March, it would be plenty of time for them to start getting another nest going. So as far as I know, they were around all last year.
They're still around, Ruben. There might be a cam out there somewhere, a live cam of them. I'm not sure, but the Ohio Department of Natural Resources might be the place to start to learn more.
Oh, okay. Very well.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ruben.
Bye-bye.
614-292-8513. If you'd like to speak with our guest this hour, Bill Thompson, he's the author of Identifying and Feeding Birds. If you have a question or comment, give us a call. If you want to show your support, we are starting our winter fun drive today, and you're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher on the new 89.7 NPR News. We need your support. That's how we do our job. We do it for you and by you. So 1-866-897-9678. Give us a call. Show your support at the $100 pledge level. We would like to show our appreciation to you with the gift of Identifying and Feeding Birds by Bill Thompson. You'll also become an instant member of the station, and with that, you will receive a member card. So pledge $100 to 89.7 NPR News right now, 1-866-897-9678, or visit WOSU.org. We have $900 to go and just about 26 minutes to go. 1-866-897-9678. We need your support. Please show it right now. Go online at WOSU.org. You can learn more about the book by Bill Thompson, and you can give us a call right now and talk to Bill if you want. And I want to say thanks to Vicki in Delaware. We have $900 to go and a little less than 26 minutes. So give us that call right now and show your support. And Susan in Dublin, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi.
I love feeding my birds, and I have a nice backyard. I have like four fir trees, and I place two feeders, and I've struggled with the keeping the squirrels away. I finally found two great feeders, so I don't have squirrels anymore. Now what I have are deer.
Ooh.
And they actually just sit under it and eat off the feeder almost all day.
They're kind of pretty too, but
they are kind of pretty. But you know, of course, in the spring when my garden grows, I'm not going to want them around.
Right.
Yeah, you know, the solution to backyard deer is you need to release some bears and wolves in your backyard.
Oh, okay.
That'll clean the deer right out.
No,
you know, it's really a problem. I've seen over the years I've been in this business, I've watched the deer sort of get it right up there on the list of backyard menaces with squirrels and things, raccoons, you know. Really, the only thing that you can do is try to use feeders that don't let a lot of seeds spill out, you know, like a platform feeder or something like that. And then obviously get your feeders up kind of high so that the deer can't jump up and knock them with their their heads or their I've seen deer get up and just bash a feeder a couple of times so the seed spills out, and then, you know, bend over and eat the seed that falls to the ground. So those are really the only things. I guess the other possibility would be to, you know, stop feeding for a while and encourage the deer to go elsewhere. Of course, that's also going to encourage your birds to go elsewhere.
Kind of a losing battle, but I just love my birds. I hate to give it up. But I'll try to get them harder, higher. That's a good idea.
Well, or closer to the house, too, you know, and then use some sort of motion detector, you know, to scare the deer. I know for a lot of years, there was a product on the market. People were having great blue herons come into their backyard ponds and eat all their fish, right? So people came out, or raccoons were doing it or whatever. So a company came up with this motion detector thing that would send a blast of water and a loud noise out. And the only problem was people would go out to enjoy their ponds in the evenings and forget that this thing was on. They themselves would get blasted. But, you know, there are things like that that will scare animals away using motion detection technology. Whether you want to go to that level of investment or not, or just go with the wolves and the bears.
Yeah, they'll love that in Dublin.
All righty. Well, thanks, Susan, for your call.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
614-292-8513 if you'd like to speak with Bill Thompson. He's the author of Identifying and Feeding Birds, and there is a section in his book about scaring off those squirrels and raccoons and that sort of thing, or at least detracting them from your bird feeders. You can, there's that and much, much more in Identifying and Feeding Birds. It is our gift to you at the $100 pledge level during this, our winter fun drive, and it is our first fun drive on 89.7 NPR News. We're very excited about the change to 89.7, and I hope you are too. You can tell us that. You can show us that. You can tell us any old time you want, but you can show us by showing your support right now, calling 1-866-897-9678 or going online to WOSU.org and making that pledge at any level that you can afford. We appreciate it at the $100 level. You're eligible for our gift to you, the Identifying and Feeding Birds book by Bill Thompson. It's a really beautiful book. As I mentioned, half the book is a reference book for common backyard varieties of birds the sort that you'll find in your backyard or could find in your backyard if you follow the directions in the rest of the book. So 1-866-897-9678. Give us a call and show your support. We appreciate it whenever you show your support. And we appreciate when you just call and talk. And Andrea from Mount Vernon, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I grew up in a family where my mother would feed the birds stale bread and crackers and that sort of thing. And I've continued that tradition. However, I think I've extended it a bit too far. I have a tendency to let things go a little too far, and I would put food out that might have started to turn or mold that I myself wouldn't eat. Is this bad for the bird's gut flora, overall health, or do they know enough to avoid it, or can their bodies handle it?
Well, that's a good question. You know, I always think about the times that when I get calls here at the Birdwatchers Digest from people saying, boy, if I put out my feeder and the birds just won't come to it. And in some cases, that's because the bird seed has actually gone bad. You know, a lot of the seeds like sunflower seed and thistle or Niger that we offer to birds, they are the birds like them because they have a lot of oil in them. And sometimes that oil can get rancid if the seed has gone bad. So the birds tend to avoid that rancid seed. And as far as moldy seed and seed that sometimes gets infested with insects, you know, I don't tend to advocate feeding that. We dump it on our compost pile and things pick through it and eat the bugs that are in it. But, you know, as far as mold and things like that, you know, I just would recommend if you had moldy bread, toss it, throw it on the compost pile, let the starlings and raccoons pick at it.
What's the difference between walking over to the compost pile and tossing it in where they might eat it anyway?
Right.
Or just tossing it off the back deck, which personally in the winter is a lot easier.
Yeah, well, I know. And I don't have any scientific proof that it's bad, but I know that there are a few birds that will go and pick through our compost pile. Or, you know, if you really don't want to have the birds come in contact with it, actually throw it away. You know, that's what we do when we have a sick bird or a bird that you know, dies in our backyard, you know, we don't leave it out there. We usually pick it up, wrap it in a you know, paper bag and put it in the trash. Just to, you don't want that potential disease vector to be there.
Okay, Andrea?
All right, thank you.
Thanks for your call. 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. And we have an email from Shane. Shane writes, how do you find resources to support indigenous species and exclude invaders like European starlings?
Yeah, that's a good question. This time of year especially, starlings really can be pigs at the bird feeder. So we feed a little suet dough on our back deck, and we try to cater to the bluebirds and Carolina wrens and you know, red-bellied woodpeckers and so forth. All the birds we like, the native species that we are trying to feed. Starlings will descend in a cloud when things are covered in snow and ice, especially this time of year, and they can just really dominate the feeder. So we station one of our two kids at the window, and when the feeder fills up with starlings, we scare them. Both starlings and house sparrows, which is sort of the other plague non-native bird species that we have here in Ohio, both of these species have been really persecuted by humans, and they are incredibly wary. So it doesn't take many times of spooking them off the feeder for them to get the message that they're not welcome. That's the first sort of layer of effort that we put in to try and keep these pigs off of our feeders.
Which is one of the reasons why they survive so well.
They're just perfectly adaptable. You know, we have only ourselves to blame because both those species were intentionally brought here to North America, and little did we know, they took off like crazy. They're like, you know, Japanese honeysuckle.
I want to say thanks to Jenny in Dublin. She sent us a picture of a bluebird. Actually, it's more than one bluebird at her feeder. It's glorious. Thank you so much, Jenny. And I'll post that picture on our Facebook page so everybody can enjoy it. Thanks to Jean in Fredericksburg. We have $800 to go and just about 17 minutes left in the hour during our discussion with Bill Thompson, author of Identifying and Feeding Birds. Just $800 to go. I know if just 10 people pick up the phone and pledge what they can afford to WOSU and to 89.7 NPR News, will make our goal. So pick up the phone right now, 1-866-897-9678. You'll feel better, and you'll be an instant member of 89.7 FM and WOSU, and you'll have a WOSU membership card to go with that at the $100 pledge level. Our gift to you will be Identifying and Feeding Birds. It's a beautiful reference book filled with the kinds of things that Bill Thompson's talking about right now on the air. So, and Rob in Westerville, you're next. Thanks for waiting, and welcome to the show.
Hi there. Hi. I just wanted to call in, and I don't know if in the book you mentioned currants for bluebirds.
Oh, yeah.
We just found that out, and they really, really, really like the currants.
They do. You know, bluebirds are such a great species to have come into the feeders, and if you can feed them with fruits, that's all the better. We feed our bluebirds grapes and things like that, but what they really love this time of year is a nice little energy blast from suet dough. We found out a few years ago that feeding too much suet dough can really cause the bluebirds to go into this sort of super high level of reproduction and kind of wear them out. So we advocate feeding that in moderation, but something like currants or raisins or, you know, bits of apple or other fruits, bluebirds, once they tune into that, they can be very loyal feeder visitors.
Yeah, we do the currants, we do sunflower chips, and we do mealworms.
Mealworms, yeah. That's a great combination, and I would, you know, the only caveat there would be, you know, offer the mealworms in moderation, you know, maybe a handful a day or so. If you feed them as many as they'll eat, boy, they'll eat them. We've actually noticed some instances, especially with eating the suet dough, of gout, believe it or not, in our bluebirds. So we have tailed way off. Just feeding enough to keep them coming in and you know, give them that nice little energy burst. But it sounds like what you're doing is just right.
Yeah, it seems to work out well.
That's great.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks a lot, Rob. Yeah. 614-292-8513 if you want to give us a call and talk with Bill Thompson. We have an email from Fred if you'd like to email us, allsides@wosu.org. And Fred writes, we have observed two birds at the feeder we have not been able to identify. One is much like a robin but with black on top, tan on the sides, and light gray on the breast. The other is smaller than the first but of similar shape. It is black on top and white on the bottom. Mm-hmm. The markings on both are very distinct.
I think the first one may be an eastern towhee, or in some of the older field guides, it was called the more descriptive rufous-sided towhee. And that's a large member of the sparrow family. And it sounds to me like the second bird might be a junco.
Okay.
You know, they call juncos the snowbirds because they come when the snow's on the ground here in Ohio, and they're just like winter, you know, gray above and white below.
And that towhee, that's spelled T-O-W-H-E-E?
That's right.
I'm looking for a picture right now, but I can't seem to get... Oh, there it is. An eastern towhee, you said.
Yep.
Well, that is in the book. So, yeah, that... boy, aren't they interesting. Those bright orange eyes.
Yeah, and towhees are birds that, they're resident species here in Ohio, and a lot of folks notice them at their feeders in the winter, but you more often hear them. They're birds that love thick, brambly cover on woodland edges, and they have that very distinctive song, Drink Your Tea. That's a really good, and a lot of people know that sound, but they don't necessarily connect it to the towhee.
Judy from Baltimore, welcome to the show.
Hi. I just recently moved from Virginia, where I've lived in the country, and I also live in the country in Ohio. And we have the same bird call that we haven't been able to identify because we've never seen the bird itself. But we call it the Judy bird, actually, because the call sounds exactly like Judy. But I'm sure that's not right. But I don't know what it is. It really sounds like it's just saying Judy, Judy, Judy over and over again, but I've never seen it.
Well, there are three possibilities for what that could be that just kind of come to mind here. One would be Northern Cardinals, the state bird of both Virginia and Ohio.
Yes.
They have a call that they sometimes do that in the field guides it's often referred to as Purdy, P-U-R-D-Y. They'll go Purdy, 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 and then often a longer note at the end of that. That's one possibility. Another possibility would be the tufted titmouse that we played earlier, and played a recording of earlier. They have a call that's kind of goes kind of like that,
yeah,
which could be sort of Judy. And then the other possibility would be Carolina Wren.
Oh,
we have that sound.
And the sound I think that you're going to play, Ann, probably sounds more like three syllables, like tea kettle, tea kettle, tea kettle. But let's go ahead and play it and see if the tonal quality matches your mystery bird.
Okay.
Yeah, and the cardinals are amazingly varied in their vocal repertoire. And if you sit and really listen to a cardinal, or really any individual bird, it's quite astounding how many variations on songs they sing.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's great. Thanks.
Okay.
Thanks, Judy.
Thanks. Bye.
614-292-8513 if you'd like to speak with Bill Thompson. We're talking about his new book, Identifying and Feeding Birds. If you enjoy this show, if this is the sort of thing you enjoy, you like listening to it and learning about birds, then you must like this show because we do it as often as possible. Show your support. Tell us that you like it by calling 1-866-897-9678 or going online at WOSU.org and making that pledge right now. Pledge what you can afford. We want nothing more than what you can afford, nothing less than what you can afford. And at the $100 pledge level, our gift to you is Identifying and Feeding Birds by Bill Thompson. It's a beautiful book. It's a beautiful reference book with lots of helpful hints about how to attract the birds you care about to your house and maybe how to detract the wildlife that you're not so interested in, including maybe what Tom's talking about right now. Tom from Circleville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. And I have a hawk that is using my bird feeder as a bird feeder. And so it is cutting down on my seed expenditure. But is there anything I can do other than taking the feeders down?
Well, There really isn't, Tom. You know, it's against federal and state law to do anything mean to the hawks.
I mean, you can startle them and stuff like that, but
taking the feeders down, what'll happen is your hawk will catch all the slow, weak, and oblivious birds, and then it'll move on somewhere else and take advantage of the slow witted birds elsewhere. Okay. So that's it. You know, it doesn't pay for the hawk and as part of the whole ecosystem to really be in one place too long, because after a while it'll be inefficient there.
Okay, so he's just weeding out the herd.
He's weeding the herd. And it's, you know, it's really, I'm glad to hear you, you know, approach it in such a positive way, because, you know, I understand why people don't like to see that, but it's, you know, it's just an extension of the natural world that we're trying to bring into our backyards, and it's very healthy for bird populations to have these hawks and other predators come in. Where I draw the line there is when we start getting some of the unnatural predators like house cats.
Right.
But yeah, it's probably either a Cooper's hawk or a sharp-shinned hawk. Across the shoulders of the bird, if it looks like you could fit it in a Pringles can or a tennis ball can,
okay. It's
probably a sharp-shinned hawk. If it looks a little bigger than that, like it would need to go into a coffee can or something like that, you know, imagine slipping the bird that over the bird's head,
okay. Then
it's probably a Cooper's hawk.
Okay.
That's the bigger of the two.
Well, we see it occasionally. So
yeah.
We put our Christmas tree up out closer to the bird feeder just to give him a little bit of shelter. But
yeah.
He's thinning out the herd and cutting down on my seed costs.
Yeah, there you go.
Thank you, Tom.
Okay, sure.
Thanks for the call.
You.
That's great. He's using it as a bird feeder. 614-292-8513. We're running out of time. We have just about 8 minutes left, 8.5 minutes left in this hour, and $600 to go. Thanks to Dana in Columbus, and thanks to Shane in Columbus. Thanks for your support for WOSU, your support for All Sides, and your support for 89.7 NPR News. We appreciate it on every level, and at the $100 level, our gift to you, if you should so choose to support our show with a pledge today, our gift to you is the Identifying and Feeding Birds, Bill Thompson's new book. It's a wonderful reference book with chapters on bird feeders. There's a list of 10 things you can do to help nesting birds. I wanted to get to that. I also want to get to our calls. If you enjoy these kinds of shows, it's because of your support that we're able to bring them to you. So 1-866-897-9678, or go online at WOSU.org. Show your support right now, because that's what tells us you enjoy this kind of programming. We enjoy bringing it to you. You enjoy listening. It's the perfect combination. So,
and I got to say, It's so cool to be looking on your new website and seeing the video simulcast. It's a little bit out of time with what I'm hearing you say in my ear.
I just waved to you, though.
It's like one of those Godzilla voiceover things.
Right,
you know?
Right. Yeah, you have to turn it down, and it'll freak you out. But, I sometimes forget about it, and then every once in a while I find myself vacantly staring into the camera and remember, oh, my God, that's a camera. It is on me right now.
But it's so really cool to be able to see that.
It's it is fun. It's a lot of fun. A lot of people are watching the show online. A lot of people are watching it on television on the Ohio Government Channel. There are a lot of ways to get to the show these days, and it's something that we try to do for people as much as we can, because they call them portals now.
Right.
We need to increase our portals. So 614-292-8513. We have a few more questions to go. We have $500 to go in our fundraising drive this hour, thanks to Ness in Dublin. Thank you so much for your support. And let's see, Lynn, you have been waiting a long time, Lynn. Thanks for waiting, and thanks for joining the show.
Oh, you're welcome. I just had a comment for Bill. Something that might be a little safer than wolves and bears in your backyard for the lady that called in about the deer. If she were to put a fish line perimeter around her yard, just run the filament about 12 to 15 inches above the ground surface, put it on stakes, the deer are startled because they can't see it, but then they feel it. And that might be an alternative to taking down her feeders or trying to hang them higher or getting wolves and bears in the backyard.
Yeah, I just want to say, for legal reasons, I was only joking about the wolves and bears.
I know that.
That's a really good suggestion with the monofilament. We've we live in the country down here in Southeast Ohio, and we have to totally enclose with 8-foot-high fence every bit of garden that we want to have produce vegetables and things. So, I've heard that monofilament trick, and I've also heard of sometimes putting pieces of white flagging on there, because when those wave, it kind of alerts the deer, because you know that's their alarm signal, is the white tail. I've also heard that helps too, and coyote
book,
urine
though,
evidently it works too. So,
great book, love it.
Hey,
thank you so much.
Oh. Thank you, Lynn.
Bye.
Thanks for the call, 614-292-8513. If you want to squeeze a quick call in, Dave from Powell, you're on the air. Welcome to the show. Hi, Dave.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I missed the conversation on bluebirds earlier.
Uh-huh.
We have 6 bluebirds at my feeder right now.
Wow.
I thought they were mostly insect and fruit eaters. Why are they attracted to the feeders in the wintertime?
Well, they're probably coming there and eating bits of sunflowers, depending on what you're feeding. They are insect eaters pretty much all spring and summer and fall, and then when the insects are gone, they switch over to fruit. And, you know, people who bring them into their feeders often do so with sunflower hearts, or as an earlier caller pointed out, bits of fruit like currants, or in some cases suet or suet dough, and mealworms. Offering live mealworms in the winter is a fantastically attractive food for bluebirds.
Yes, I've noticed them going to under the suet feeder and picking up the crumbs that are left from that, and I do have sunflower seed in, and they seem to be eating that, and it's great to have them in the wintertime here at the feeder.
Yeah, we did have a really good food fruit crop this year, and I noticed that there's still plenty of bittersweet and some wild cherry, even some persimmons still on our farm. So I think, despite the bad weather, there has been plenty of wild fruit available.
Yeah.
Thank you, Dave.
Okay. Thank you.
Take care. We are running out of time. We have $500 to go for this goal. We appreciate all the support you've shown us so far. If you can find it in your heart, in your pocketbook, pick up the phone, 1-866-897-9678. Show your support for WOSU and 89.7 NPR News and All Sides with Dan Fisher, because we need you to do what we do every day for you. Our gift for you at the $100 level, if you can manage that, is Identifying and Feeding Birds by Bill Thompson. Bill's been our guest this hour, answering lots of questions. A lot more questions are answered in the book. There's a chapter called Trouble in Paradise that can help you with some common bird problems. It includes a long list of bird-friendly plants, and you can learn more about nesting boxes, and it includes a chart, as I mentioned before, with what size of home for certain birds need. There's a list of 10 things you can do to help nesting birds. I think we're just going to have to do another show on that one, Bill. And if you're someone who likes hummingbirds, the book teaches you how to attract hummingbirds to your yard. Give us a call, 1-866-897-9678, and show your support for WOSU. Make that pledge right now at any pledge level you can afford. Pledge whatever you can afford. We appreciate it, because everyone who does make a pledge is telling us that they care about the programming and that this is something they appreciate, and everyone can appreciate it in their own way and within their own budget. You can also go online to WOSU.org and make that pledge online via our secure server. Either way, it only takes a minute or two to do this. We have our volunteers standing by. We just have $300 to go. It would be super cool if we would make the goal this hour. We have just 2 minutes to go and $300 to go. Thanks to everybody for your support. Thanks to everybody for your great questions this hour. Bill, I hope you've enjoyed the program. I hope you'll come back, too.
Oh, anytime, man. It's always a blast being on with you.
We have lots more bird sounds to go, and lots more questions for Bill. There's 50 million, I think, bird watchers out there, and I always just appreciate all the ones that have called in today and everyone who's listened. You still have time to give us a call at 1-866-897-9678 and show your support right now. Right now is when you need to do it. You can also go online at WOSU.org. If you call right now, if you go online right now and make that pledge, that tells people that All Sides with Dan Fisher is something that you care about and something that you support and something that you want to hear more of. 1-866-897-9678, or go online at WOSU.org. We'll continue to bring you these sorts of programs because you continue to show your support, and we appreciate it. Thanks again. Thanks for listening. This has been All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is WOSU 89.7, WOSU HD1, and WOSU 820 Columbus, and streaming online at WOSU.org. 89.7, NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media. Thank you.